This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
So you've heard my rants about how our financial system is rigged, and I've interviewed hundreds of experts to back up those claims and help you align your investments with the most powerful forces in the world, governments and central banks. I'm also using a perpetual wealth strategy with my income property investments that you should check out. It has enhanced the security of my liquid assets, boosted overall ROI, and shifted money away from the banksters. My friend Pat Donahoe, who's one of our Venture Alliance members, runs Paradigm Life, and he has a free report that you can download at beyourbank.com. That's beyourbank.com. Check it out today. Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show, episode number 873. This is your host, Jason Hartman. Thank you so much for joining me today. This is actually a little bit of an odd intro today. I am in Sacramento, California, visiting my Aunt Joan, who you've heard on the show before, and many of you talked about how much you enjoyed hearing her story of how she built this real estate empire, kind of the old school way. Here in Sacramento, and just buying in the neighborhood and doing it over the course of many decades, and got up to about 100 houses, give or take. And unfortunately, we recently lost my Uncle John. That's Aunt Joan's husband. They were married for 59 years. Wow, 59 years. You don't see that kind of stuff anymore nowadays too often, do you? I'm actually at the cemetery where John is buried, and just got to tour everything with Joan and see the whole thing. And so it's just been great up here visiting her and visiting my cousins and so forth too. But today I'm going to replay an interview I did with Elizabeth just last week. And Elizabeth actually kind of interviewed me. I was kind of interviewing her. It's really not an interview. It's more of a discussion, I guess I should say. But I thought it would be valuable for you to hear that. But before we get to that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the contest for the Amazon Echo and get that done. So that's hartmaneducation.com/contest. We will wrap up that contest here at the end of the week and announce the winner next week. Remember, with our little contest that we have, your odds are always very good because, you know, we only have like 6 listeners in the whole world. Just kidding. But your odds are good. Always enter those contests when we have them. hartmaneducation.com/contest. And then I also wanted to mention we have a very limited offer for people who would like to get a free 1-hour onboarding session with Zach. Zach is our customer service person for Property Tracker and Real Estate Tools. He will help you get all of your stuff organized and loaded into the Property Tracker software and make it nice and easy for you to get started and be a very organized real estate investor. So that is a free 1-hour onboarding session with Zach for the first 20 people who want to sign up for Property Tracker. Just go to jasonhartman.com and click on the Property Tracker link and image that you see right on the front page, and you can get signed up and get your free one-hour onboarding session. Remember, that's a very limited offer, so take advantage of that. It'll really, really help get you going. I guess that's pretty much it for today. We've got our Meet the Masters coming up. Tickets have been selling like crazy. That's in January, and you can sign up for that at jasonhartman.com in the events section as well. Get some early bird pricing. Pricing has increased for that, but it's still a good early bird price, and it's going to be quite an event this year. So we've had more advanced ticket sales this time than any other time we've hosted it in the past. So jasonhartman.com in the events section for that. Uncle John will surely be missed. He was such a knowledgeable man. He taught me so much throughout the course of my life. He was a pilot for many years. He had a military funeral, and he was just a great guy and quite an inspiration in terms of real estate too, for sure. What my aunt and uncle did over the course of decades, I saw them do it as I was growing up, and it's hanging out with my aunt here the last few days. I tell you, she just tickles me because I rented this little car, a little Mini Cooper car, a little convertible Mini Cooper. I'm driving her around, and Coco the dog is in the back seat, and it's impossible to drive anywhere with my aunt because Aunt Joan keeps telling me about every house we pass. It's just so funny. John was the same way, maybe a little more quiet than Aunt Joan. You drive around town here, and Joan is telling me about this house and this architecture and that architecture, and it's just like real estate is in their blood. So Uncle John will be missed, and let's get to our main segment today, and that'll be Elizabeth chatting with me, and we're talking about a variety of subjects. I think you'll enjoy them.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Women Investing Network. I'm your co-host, Elizabeth Embry, and today I have our co-host, Jason Hartman. Jason, welcome.
Thank you, Elizabeth. How's everybody doing out there?
You know, I think it's been about 30 episodes since we last spoke. So
wow.
It's a
time
fun
flies.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And you just got back from a whirlwind European vacation.
Yeah, I don't know how much vacation it was. It felt like I was pretty connected and working a lot. So I would say it was a trip. I don't know if it was a total vacation, but yeah, it was a little bit of vacation. I mean, I guess certainly as much as I have at home, because, you know, you're not always working when you're at home either. But that was my second trip to Europe this year. So this year I spent 7 weeks in Europe. And boy, I just kind of want to experience it a little more because I think it's falling apart. Their economies are just falling apart. In Europe, it's amazing, but you know, they've got huge demographic problems, immigration problems, economic problems.
The U.S. amplified in many ways, it seems.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to look at it. I mean, it's a whole different set of circumstances, of course, but you know, Eastern and Western are very different. I was in both this time and last time. But you know, as we were talking about before we started recording for this, it's really valuable, I think, to travel just as for a human, you know, just for life, to understand and gain perspective on the world. I've always said that before someone should be allowed to hold public office, they should be required to travel the world and own a business, you know, have a broad perspective and support people and have the obligation to actually make payroll every 2 weeks. Good experience for politicians, right?
And I think that travel just gives you such a neat perspective. Now, one of the things that you were talking about is like all of the troubles that you've been seeing and all of the, I'm assuming, some fun stuff too. How has that impacted your thoughts around as an entrepreneur, as a business person? How are those things impacting your thinking?
Well, when you say troubles, what do you mean?
Oh, well, for instance, you were talking about the immigration challenges, the population challenges, the economic challenges that you're seeing in Europe.
You know, one thing is for sure, and I guess the most prescient lesson for it is Japan. If a country doesn't have a birth rate, it basically becomes extinct. I mean, the environmentalists have this saying they always talk about when they refer to species extinction, they say extinction is forever. Extinction is forever. And that's true of people and countries too. So, you know, when you look at Japan and they used to call it the lost decade, and now we can call it the lost two decades, actually entering the lost third decade, it's not necessarily an economic problem per se that Japan has. What it really has is a demographic problem. And when you don't have young people coming in to support the old people, that makes society lopsided. And the reason the U.S. has escaped that, because the birth rate among the what you'd call not really natives, because nobody's really much of a native except American Indians in the U.S., but the sort of native U.S. people for the last 200 years, right, or 100, is those people aren't having many children. But the U.S. has taken on a lot of immigration. So that's the way the U.S. has kind of escaped that problem, because the immigrants are paying into the system. And even, you know, and then of course the U.S. has the reserve currency of the world and all kinds of advantages that other countries don't have. It can print money until the end of time and not be really held accountable for it like other countries have to be. And so, you know, but that is one way that the U.S. has escaped some of the problems that, say, Japan is facing. And other countries to look at this example are Russia, and in 10 years, China. I mean, China, Elizabeth, because of their one-child policy, is going to. They don't have it yet. It hasn't hit them yet. But the thing with demographics is you can absolutely positively know what's going to happen. You know, in 10 years, everybody will be 10 years older. There's no question about that, right?
That is fair.
And so it's a really sort of easy thing to project, right? As some other things are very hard to project.
Right. And then when you've got these patterns of places like Japan, where you've seen, you know, how their culture and how their birth rate and their demographics have played out over time, you can see that established pattern and then see those other countries starting to follow that.
Oh, no question. Yeah. And if you don't have those young people working to support the old people as they retire and live too long in retirement. I mean, when Social Security was invented, the average lifespan was like 4 years after retirement. Now it's 30. Okay, so you can see there's a problem there, right? We have another show that you're all too familiar with called the Longevity and Biohacking Show, another podcast. And there are just huge, wide-ranging issues here that affect societies all over the world, because people are just living so much longer. And not only are they living longer, but they're living healthier. I mean, why the heck should we have 65 as this sort of retirement age, if you will? I mean, retirement, well, I propose that retirement is not good for people. You could retire, I could retire. I have zero interest in retiring, because as soon as you retire, you're probably going to die pretty soon.
That's something that people ask me often. They're like, Elizabeth, why don't you just kick back at this point? You know, your real estate wealth has helped you enough that it covers so much. Why don't you just go find an island and kick back? Yeah. And I'm thinking, well, I just don't want to. That doesn't sound like much fun, honestly.
No, you got to be stimulated and engaged in life. And it's not really about the money. It's about doing cool things and creating. I mean,
and contributing.
Yeah, and contributing. You know, I mean, you hosting your show, for example, Elizabeth, is one of your forms of art. Okay, it's art. It's just like Steven Spielberg making a movie, or George Lucas, or whatever. It's art.
Also, for me, I mean, it's an opportunity to give back to the young women and men that are becoming entrepreneurs. They're growing their careers. They're just starting to think about their wealth strategy and starting to build that foundation. I mean, being able to give them that one-stop shop of not just my knowledge, not just your knowledge, and your knowledge is extensive. I mean, you've been doing this for a number of years, you know a thing or two. But the fact that we're pulling in all these amazing speakers with their perspectives as well, it's really a great opportunity to really contribute and help others grow to become, you know, successful as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
So when you're having these conversations, when you're going into these different locations, you're starting to be able to strike up conversations with the people that are around you. You're getting these fresh perspectives too. And that's one of the things I love about traveling, because then I'm learning about things, or I'm hearing about an existing, you know, a challenge, an idea, whatever, but from somebody's completely different impression, a different way of training, a different way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No question about it. I mean, that's just a really important thing to gain perspectives and just look at the way things are done and look at the sort of gadgets people use and these whole different ways of thinking. That's what, you know, I always say, Elizabeth, I have this morbid fascination with communism. I would really love to go to North Korea, but I'm too scared. That's why I don't go.
Yeah, please don't.
Yeah, no, I'm not going. But I've been to Cuba.
and I've been to pretty much everywhere in the Eastern Bloc, and I've been to Russia. It's really quite fascinating to see how people think, you know, in these places. It's really just eye-opening. It really is.
Absolutely. So speaking of perspectives, you know, I've been, as you know, historically really focused on residential. I don't know that much about commercial real estate. And I had an opportunity to meet with this local group here in Seattle, this local group of women badasses. I mean, these women are just like really at the top of their game. They work in some of the largest commercial real estate companies in the U.S. here in the Seattle area. I know on one of your recent shows in Creating Wealth, you talked about where all the cranes are going. And, you know, that's a foreshadowing of not only the work that's here today, but all of the ability, all the places that people could rent or live in the future, but that it can get to a tipping point. It can become a bubble. Now, here in Seattle, I've seen a 10-year cycle in residential and in commercial, you know, that's been like clockwork. And so for me, it felt very frothy. The perspective of these women who are very knowledgeable, very experienced, was that, no, we're just going to blow right past that 10-year dip because there's so much business coming in the area. There's so much demand coming. And I was really surprised. And I'd love to get your thoughts, because for me, I've got these tried and true indicators when I'm looking at a market. And from their perspective, they were like, nope, this time it's different.
Okay, right. And by the way, Elizabeth, I'm so glad you said those words, because those are the famous last words of every investor who eats it. This time it's different. Be very careful with that kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. Okay. They always say, I mean, from back to the days of tulip mania, okay, a couple hundred years ago, they always say, this time it's different. So those words are very dangerous words. But just want to make sure the listeners and I understand what your argument is that there's a business cycle, right? Is that what you mean when you talk about 10 years?
Yeah. So in Seattle, you know, I was working at Washington Mutual on the IT side, but for home loans. I've lived here since 89. And every 10 years, like clockwork, we get this massive constriction of the residential market. And then all of a sudden, there's something that happens and you can't give away a house. You know, for instance, my residence fluctuated literally 100% over the last 10 years. I always see this cycle of, you know, it's a very cyclical market. Everybody's flush with cash and real estate is very tight. And then all of a sudden, you know, real estate is very prevalent. You can buy a house for really inexpensive. Everything goes 30, 40% below its high, and then it starts coming back out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, okay. So let's examine that. So why has that happened? Because, you know, part of the business cycles, there's this concept of as the economy starts to take off, people start feeling more comfortable. There's a wealth effect. They have more cash in their pocket. They have more equity in their house. Their business is doing well. Their job is doing well. You know, maybe they're getting a raise or they're climbing the corporate ladder. You know, businesses are expanding and they're opening a new location or putting in new infrastructure and technology. And that has a multiplier effect because it creates jobs. So all of this starts to happen, right? They stock up on, they increase their inventories. And, you know, there's all these trailing effects in the economy from all of this spending, right? Mm-hmm. And then it goes too far. And then they wonder, well, now I've got all this infrastructure, I've got these new locations, I've got more inventory, I've got more systems, I can handle more business. And where are all the customers? We overbuilt, you know, and that happens in the real estate market. It happens in virtually everything.
I remember
right?
So, in the 80s in Dallas, they just overbuilt so much that I think it was like a half a decade before they started filling all of those different commercial buildings. You know, I think
those are the see-through buildings. Okay.
Right.
So they have those in Dallas and Houston. They've had them all over. And what that means is, you know, there's no tenants inside those beautiful glass office buildings. You can see right through them, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, that certainly happens. The only thing I would say is, and you've heard me talk extensively, I know you probably plug your ears and don't want to hear it, about Trump, our childish president, Donald Trump. Okay. our president who thinks he's Blair on Gossip Girl or he's still running a reality show. I don't know which. But love him or hate him, okay? And, you know, I love him a little more than hate him, even though, I mean, I just think he's like a kook, okay, in a bit of a way. But I'll tell you something. Regardless of what you think of him, he is loosening the floodgates of money, okay? Mm. And in real estate, there's this thing that we've talked about extensively before, and I've talked about very extensively on my show, called Dodd-Frank, right? And this was a very poorly written 2,200-page bill.
Absolutely.
And it has really constricted the real estate market. And Trump wants to repeal or at least soften Dodd-Frank. And as that happens, more money will flow. And as lending requirements are loosened, more money will flow into the market. So that's one thing to know, okay? The other thing to know is that when you look at these, like the business cycle, and the business cycle is a legitimate thing, okay? It certainly has happened throughout history. But remember, we came off a very low. So the question is it fair to argue that during the Great Recession, the worst economy we had in seven decades, is it fair to say that, well, the cycle started in 2000 and, well, really, we don't want to say 2007, that would be 10 years, but say it started in 2008 or 9, right? So 9 or 10 years it's been going, right? You could argue. Mm-hmm. And or even 2010, so 7 years it's been going. The economy's been on an upward trend since then. And so it's time for a recession, right? That would be the thinking. But I would kind of caution against that thinking a little bit, only because we really didn't get to sort of par until maybe 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we've only really been in the boom for 5 years, I would argue.
Fair enough. It's like whether you're trending up or trending down. I just remember. So I view Seattle's health by the traffic on the street. And what I mean by that is in 2000, when we had the tech crash, the tech bubble, you could get anywhere in 15 minutes. Now the same distance takes you an hour and a half, right? So when people aren't working, that's when there's no traffic. When people are working, it takes you forever. And we've had these very consistent, almost like clockwork, these outside catalysts that force the cycle, but it magically happens in this 10-year cycle where, you know, for instance, Boeing was the largest employer in the area. And, you know, in the late 80s, it started laying off people. Then there was the tech bubble. Then there was, you know, the recession. There was, you know, there was just all of these things that very consistently happen. And so I think it's fair to say it's like, where are you actually at in that cycle?
Mm-hmm.
But it still feels very frothy to me.
Yeah. Well, okay. So now that we kind of addressed that part of the general business cycle concept, now I think it would be fair to look at specific real estate markets. And then, of course, we got to do our usual thing. And you've talked about this a lot to your listeners. The three basic types of real estate markets around the world, doesn't matter where you are. Okay. It's all the same. Linear, cyclical, and hybrid markets. Okay, those are the three basic types of real estate markets. A linear market is one of these boring markets. You don't hear about it on the news. It chugs along and does its thing. That's what we like. We like those linear, very reliable markets. The cyclical market is Seattle, LA, virtually all of the West Coast, the expensive Northeastern markets, South Florida, Paris, Hong Kong, Dubai, London, all of these trophy places around the world are cyclical markets. And cyclical markets have big, glorious highs and really ugly lows. Okay. They are a roller coaster ride. And then there's the hybrid market, which is the sort of in between. Hybrids would be Austin, Texas, Phoenix, Denver, places like that.
Atlanta. Okay?
Yeah, Atlanta is now a hybrid, but before it was pretty linear. But yeah, now I would call it a hybrid. You're right. So in the cyclical markets, we are way past the point of fundamentals. Like nothing makes sense in Los Angeles or Seattle. You know, these markets are very overvalued. But here is the thing. The question is, like, just because I said they're overvalued and we're past the point of fundamentals, and I know, Elizabeth, you'd agree with that, just because we said that and it's true doesn't mean they're going to crash tomorrow. Okay.
Well, that's a fair point, Jason. That is a fair point.
Yeah. Nobody knows. The question is, how long can it go on? And nobody really knows the answer to that. Because, you know, even though the market is massively overvalued today, if Dodd-Frank gets repealed and, a bunch more money flows into the real estate market, hey, it's going to keep going. We're kicking the can down the road, okay?
So one of the things that I think that Trump has been really clear on is his frustration with our existing trade agreements like NAFTA and immigration in just in general. Now, in a lot of the coastal markets, we've got a lot of Russian and Chinese investors really snapping up real estate left and right. So let me ask you this, knowing that we're in an inventory shortage, do you actually think it's a good thing if they start getting blocked from buying? Or do you think it's a bad thing because now the prices for the existing real estate are going to start dipping?
I think they distort the market, okay? That kind of foreign investment distorts markets. It's illogical because a lot of those so-called investors, and I wouldn't call them investors at all, are very wealthy people from overseas that are literally just parking money because their countries are so corrupt and so unreliable that, you know, America, I mean, has great rule of law. Okay. You know, we can complain all day about, you know, how the court systems are a mess and everybody sues each other here and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that's all true. But compared to what? I mean, compared to what?
Well, that is the question, right?
I mean, America has fantastic rule of law. Investors from around the world always, they call America the Brinks truck, because it is a safe place to store your money. So a lot of these foreign investors in all the places you mentioned are literally, I mean, they're buying stupid things, right? A lot of them buy high-rise condos that make zero sense, and they just leave them vacant.
Right. They just park, they just, like you said, they're parking their money.
They're just literally parking money, and it's better than putting it in their own country. You know, a lot of times it's a diversification strategy. It's a safety strategy. It's they don't trust their own government. They don't trust their banking system. I mean,
it's
I was talking to someone. Yeah. I was talking to a Ukrainian girl when I was in Prague just a few weeks ago. And she said the Ukrainian banks, the joke is that if you put your money in the bank in Ukraine, will you ever get it back? Like, you know, that's basically what we're dealing. I mean, the stuff we take for granted, other people do not take this for granted, okay?
And I know that even just in their day-to-day habits, like you're mentioning, in Russia, it's common for you to put your pay voucher into an ATM, you pull all the money out, and then you put the money back in, and you pay your utility bill, you pay your water bill, you pay your cell phone bill, you even buy travel through a kiosk, this same kiosk. This kiosk functions as like a transfer station because nobody wants to leave any money with the bank. They don't even want to leave it in there for a second.
You know what's going to be really interesting? I mean, I always say it's an amazing time to be alive. And what's going to be really interesting, and we're starting to see an inkling of it now, and I think it's super exciting, although I don't know what it really means yet. It's too early to tell. T-E-T-T, too early to tell, is the innovation in the banking world and payment systems. Certainly there have been the cryptocurrencies, which, by the way, I wouldn't risk too much on that because I think that that'll be squashed. But there's all kinds of like peer-to-peer models that are rising up and just different interesting things in the world of banking. You know, so much of the world is unbanked that I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah, I think that the fact that your phone, the mobile currency systems, your phone actually works like a wallet. And we have very little like Apple Pay or Android Pay in businesses as a norm. So, for instance, I think there's here locally, there's Chevron stations that'll take Apple Pay and Home Depot.
Yeah.
Those are the only things, right?
But I think Walgreens will take it. Walgreens.
Okay, good. So there's three stores. You know, you can get gas.
I think Trader Joe's takes Apple Pay too. Yeah.
Oh, does it? Okay. So you can get an apple. You can buy a hammer and, and get some aspirin. But, you know, it does seem like we've really got to get off the concepts of you know, the standard wallet. And I know we've talked about this a number of times, but the fact that the US dollar, it's anybody's guess where inflation is really. Mm-hmm. And so the value that's perceived versus the value that it is, it'll be interesting to see where it goes, especially since it seems like things are going faster. The changes are taking place faster these days.
Absolutely, they are. Hey, Elizabeth, you know what? I'm glad you mentioned inflation because I talk about that a lot on my Creating Wealth show. But I want to just talk about that for a moment, if we can, with your listeners. And of course, the government manipulates and lies about the true inflation rate. And there are two main reasons for the government to want to do that. Number one is that all of these government employees, their pay, and all the entitlement programs, disability, Social Security, et cetera, they're all indexed to inflation. So the lower they state the inflation rate to be, the less the government has to pay. That's one reason. The other reason is because just generally, you know, if you want to keep the populace happy, you've got to mislead them into thinking things are better than they are. Okay. So the ways that the government mainly manipulates the inflation rate is with substitution, hedonics, and waiting. Okay. And when you look at an index like the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, they'll substitute things. So if the price of beef goes up, they'll just substitute it for chicken and they'll say everybody will just eat chicken instead of beef and, you know, everything, there's no inflation. Okay. And when technology gets better and you buy a new laptop computer and that computer is twice as good as the last one you owned, but it costs the same price, they'll say you only paid half the price for it when you really paid the whole price for it, because they'll say it's twice as good, which is an absurd idea, because hedonic adjustments basically say that we as people aren't entitled to progress. The progress goes to the inflation index rather than to us.
Yeah, which is just not fair. That's ridiculous.
Could you imagine, Elizabeth, them hedonically indexing everything in the world since the time the wheel was invented? So the wheel made things so much better than, you know, horses are walking on foot before we had the wheel. So we should just hedonically adjust everything because 1,000 times better will assume it only costs 1,000 times less. And then weighting, just how much they weight each item in the index, right? Mm-hmm. But there's another hidden thing here. And Elizabeth, you've been there, like when we were in Seattle at our Venture Alliance retreat that you and your husband, Neil, helped us host up there. You remember our Venture Alliance member, Jeff, and he was just so funny. And he was having a couple of drinks and he was just ranting about inflation, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And saying there's just not really hardly any inflation, blah, blah, blah. But I beg to differ, because when you look around the world now and live your life, you gotta notice that even though the price of something may not have changed that much, number one, it got smaller and lesser. So the bag of chips weighs less than it did, okay? And there's all kinds of ways that they're cheating us there. The chocolate bar is not as big as it was, et cetera, et cetera. But the big one is this, you ready? It's self-service. We are doing so much stuff ourself nowadays. When we go online and buy an airline ticket, no one's helping us do that anymore. It's all self-service.
Right.
I mean, we've been pumping our own gas for decades now. Do you remember? When I was a kid, we used to have full serve and self-serve, and the guy would check
the oil. They still do in Oregon, but they also have income, state income tax and all sorts of taxation to cover for that, and it's indicated in the price as well. But you're right. I mean, I've been trying to sell some property.
Oh yeah, with roof stock, yeah.
That hasn't.
Well,
it hasn't gone as well as I'd hope. But you know, the shtick is, you know, you're going to have less of a fee because you're going to be doing a certain amount of self-service. It's going to be easy, right? And I'll tell you, the amount of effort I put into that, I really wish that they would have just charged me the full price, you know, in order to.
Right. Index your time into the inflation index with all of the stuff you do yourself nowadays, and then you'll really know the inflation rate. There's been a lot more inflation than you think. I mean, all day long, I'm just doing everything myself.
Right, the automation.
No one is helping me anymore. You got to call and wait on hold forever when you call any company. And then you're talking to, you know, some drone in the Philippines who's reading a script. I mean, it's super annoying.
The thing that gets me is I can't handle the self-service checkout line. I will actually wait in line for a teller one, because I don't want all the jobs to go away. I actually want the tellers to, or the checkout people to still be there. because I actually like service and to be able
well,
to
you're fighting again, you're fighting a valiant fight for the working class hero against a trend you will not win.
I know. Okay.
Automation will win. You'll just prolong it a little bit.
It frustrates me to no end. I don't know how to bag. I don't want to know how to bag. I want somebody to just run the stuff through, bag it for me, maybe even take it to my car like back in the day.
Oh my God. Nobody does that anymore. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a different world. Self-service, folks, you're doing a lot of stuff yourself nowadays, and that is part of the inflation rate. It's deceiving. But think about how your life was 30 years ago, and you didn't do all this stuff yourself. You had a travel agent. You had a concierge person that would get you tickets for events. You know, all kinds of stuff is self-serve nowadays. You know what drives me nuts is these, and I call me terrible. Okay, maybe I'm a terrible person, but I was at New York. I had to stay one night in JFK on the way back, and I was at the hotel, and I go down to breakfast to have the $19 breakfast, okay? And the crappy $19 breakfast in the hotel.
I was like, that's a cup of coffee and a Danish maybe?
Well, no, there were some crappy scrambled eggs too. But the so-called waiter, all he did is put the check on my table. He never said, do you want any coffee or water? I had to get up, get my own coffee, my own water, everything. Self-serve completely. And there's a space for tip. And you know what I wrote in? I wrote self-service and no tip.
Yeah.
I didn't write no tip, but I just wrote self-service. Like, why should I leave a tip? He didn't do anything except put the check on my table. And now I know I'm going to hear from people saying, you're terrible. Look at all these restaurants now that are like these modern restaurants where you go up to the counter and you place your order at a restaurant and they turn the little screen around, like the little iPad cash register, and the tip is either 15% or no, it's 18%, 20%, 25%, or 30%. For what? This is self-service.
And the reason why people are going to say, Jason, you're a meanie, is because they're saying that guy has to, or that person has to survive off their tips, because we've already created this situation where we're already saying provide the absolute minimal amount of service because we're going to try to automate everything. And so that person, that ratio of, waiter to restaurant attendee, so to speak, person at the restaurant is probably 1 to 30. So he doesn't even have the bandwidth to provide any decent type of service, let alone did he not get any training. But his employer is probably put in a wage that doesn't even allow for him to have a living wage unless he got a bunch of tips. Right.
I hear the liberal coming out. Oh. Yes, I don't disagree with you. I just think that people have got to stop viewing these minimum wage jobs as careers. They were never meant to be careers. When I was a kid, you would work at McDonald's when you were in high school, and then you would actually get a real job eventually, right? But now we've got this whole class of the working poor, and I admit it's really sad, but the solution is not the Bernie Sanders $15 minimum wage solution, because that's just going to create more inflation and more automation and less jobs. The solution is that you've got to stop looking at these things as careers. You should not work at Taco Bell or Starbucks for any more than a year, okay, when you're like a kid. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
They're not careers.
So I'm going to shift gears on you because one of the listeners I was talking with the other day asked me a question and I didn't have a good answer for her. And I know you know the answer to this, which is she missed.
I don't know the answer, I'll make it up.
Okay, good. So she unfortunately, she was behind on listening to the podcast. So she missed the ability to go to the Oklahoma City property tour. And she was totally bummed about that because she was really excited about being able to actually go and see the properties. And she asked, so when's the next property tour? When's the next event? And so when's the next property tour? When's the next event, Jason?
Well, the next event that we actually have on the calendar is our big one, our big annual event, Meet the Masters of Income Property, in January in the San Diego area. And people can find out about that at jasonhartman.com. And that's a big 3-day conference and it'll be awesome. And we've got some terrific early bird pricing. Tickets are selling like hotcakes for that event now. But we will probably do a smaller event in the fall sometime, which will maybe be be a buying event or a property tour or something, you know, look for that around October sometime.
Okay, terrific. Well, Jason, thanks for making the time in amongst all your whirlwind travel. It was good to catch up and have a great day.
Yep. It's always great talking to you, Elizabeth. Thank you. And happy investing to you and your listeners.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.